Welcome to Excite Beyond the Lab. My name is Ralf Ditscherlein, and today we are stepping out of the lab to meet
Matthäus,
who is using
the fantastic X-ray CT
to explore
glass forms monoliths.
Tune in as we discuss how these tools help uncovering new insights about our planet right from the heart of our research environment. Dive in to the practical side of science with us and see how the project Excite brings research to life. Now a brief advertisement about the Excite Network. What is it? It's a collaboration between over 30 research centers in Europe, and we have the pleasure to participate. And it's supported by the European Union, and it helps scientists use advanced imaging technologies to study Earth and environmental materials. The network encourages scientists from different areas such as geology and biology to work together on a project that makes the world a little better, step by step. And today we are here at the cafeteria at the TU Bergakademie Freiberg in Freiberg. And yes, Freiberg, what is Freiberg? It's a little city in Saxony in Germany, and it's famous for its deep mining history. And the city's university, which we are here, is the oldest university of mining and technology in the world. And that brings me to you, Matthäus. Thanks for your time to coming out of the lab to guide me also through this first podcast here.
Yeah.
And yeah, where are you coming from? What is your main research topic? Please introduce yourself.
Okay, first of all, thank you, Ralf, for the invitation for this podcast. It's an honor to be the first invited to be in here. My name is Matthäus Griner Lima. It's a way Brazilian name because we have this German name and a Portuguese name. So I came from Brazil, and I am now doing my PhD research applying this so-called technique X-ray computed tomography with high resolution aspects. But we will cover that later, probably, right?
Yes, I think so.
And yeah, I am now using this technique to study some samples in the field of material sciences. And I work in a laboratory where we apply the nuclear physics fundamentals with these techniques. And DCT is one of the techniques that I work with.
Oh, that's nice. So you have also CTs at your lab in Brazil?
Yeah. In Brazil, we have this. In our lab, we have this two equipment, which is called the Bruker 1172 and the Bruker 1173 Skyscan. And we can measure samples in three dimensions with a high resolution up to 1 micron of resolution. Yeah. So the images that we acquire are in a scale of micrometers.
Which is very... What would be a good comparison if a width of a hair is actually, below 100 micrometers something?
Yeah, close to that.
And it's, a hundredth time smaller. It's very small, And you talk about a lot of the sample, and I have a little surprise for you.
No way.
Surprises.
Is it a sample?
It sounds like this. It's something like a sample. Maybe you open it.
Okay.
And describe what you see.
Okay.
And what you already know from our previous discussions, what this may be.
It is a bread baggage, like a paper bag with something inside that feels heavy.
It feels heavy.
And it is in Eierschecker?
Yes, it's an Eierschecker. And nice. For all of you who does not know what Eierschecker is, there's actually a Wikipedia article, and I will summarize it a little bit. Eierschecker is a traditional layered cake from Saxony and Thuringia in Germany, and it typically features three layers. A bottom layer of yeast of short crust pastry, a middle layer of quark vanilla pudding, and a top layer of creamy egg custard. And the middle layer is of interest because there's a difference between the Dresdner and the Freiberger Eierschecker.
Mm-hmm.
Could you distinguish both?
Yeah, the Freiberger Eierschecker is the small one without the middle layer, and for me it's the best one. Sorry, the Dresden guys.
He's not paid to say this.
And the Dresden is the one with three layers, and there's this cream inside, which were originally used to make the walls of
Freiburg. Yes, the walls of Freiburg. Yeah, the Freiburger version was adapted historically when quark was unavailable, and they're using more eggs and sugar to enhance the flavor. This is in the Wikipedia article, and that's totally right. Mm-hmm. But coming back to maybe the... yes, I have two important questions regarding this. Do you like it? You answered it, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course, the Freiburger Eierschecke is much better. No. But which one fits more to your sample?
Maybe the Dresden one, get the point, because it's more foamy.
Yay.
Yeah, it has more air inside, and it's like lighter in the same volume.
Yeah.
So... getting to my samples, I work with these foams, which seems like a sponge, but it's a hard sponge. Like, if you combine the sponge structure with a... what is called? Maybe an asphalt aspect, mm-hmm. because it's black and hard. And, yeah, and they have sizes of maybe a pea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, close to a P.
Mm. And why is it black? Why is the matrix black?
Oh, because we burned them to make it. We actually, the synthesis processes is to fill some sponge with this content, with this glass, liquid glass, and then we burn them, we bake them, and then they become black because they are rotten. Mm-hmm. No. What is called in English?
Because I think they... They
are thermal treated.
Yeah, thermal treated, and so...
But this is the scientific term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I looked at your samples, they are very small. Could you say maybe like the monoliths, like how small they are?
They are close to 1 centimeter height
mm-hmm.
and 0.5 centimeter wide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a... cube, a block with these dimensions, 0.5 per 0.5 centimeter, usually.
And what is the special thing where you perform the scans at our Versa here? It's a.
Yeah, I actually came to Freiburg using the as part of the Excite program to use their in situ compression cell that enables us to compress the sample while it's being scanned. So we acquired these images, these three-dimensional images of the sample, while it was being compressed. So what we do in practice is to measure a sample, this block of foam, then we compress a little bit, then we scan it again, and we do this like 5 times in a row. And with these 5 3D images with the of the same sample in different compressions, we can analyze their mechanical properties. That is the interesting part of my research in here.
And how do you figure out where and why these structures are broken afterwards? What do you see at the images where you say this is...
We can do some sort of analysis. The most common one is just to compare the images side to side, and we point like... the 7-year-old game? Is that a game in here? When you have to point the differences of the images?
Okay. Yeah. Like the games you have in your newspaper or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And...
do you also have this special technique where you can look at a photo? Do you know that?
No.
Where you can look like through a photo or an image through, which has these differences, and then in your mind... Your brain is able to only show the differences. And this when I was younger, there was a game where you can do this, and then the objects were... If you are trained to do this, then you can really, really fast through.
No. Maybe I should try to detect the problems of my samples. Yeah. But yeah, the first way is to compare them side to side and detect the differences after the compressions. But the advanced way, I would say, is to apply this technique, analysis technique called digital volume correlation, which is a variation of the technique called digital image correlation, but we apply this technique in a three-dimensional volume. And then we can assess their differences in a quantitative way. I mean, you can measure the displacement of some parts of your sample after the compression in like how many microns they change, they shift the place. And it's usually the most advanced way to analyze this set of samples.
And this is done with a special software or something? Or you load all the data sets and then the software does it automatically? Or do you have to do some manual work?
In practice, what we do is to get these results, these images of the samples. And we try to match them as close as possible. Since they are not the same, it is impossible to match them completely. But we align these volumes and we correct the colors to be the same in every image. And then we say to the software, which is the Amira Visu software, we say to it, like, we expect that the motion in the sample would be X microns. So we have a prior measurement of it before starting the analysis. And then we also divide the volume of the sample in a grid. And then the software will say, like, in each block of this grid, for each direction it moved, and also in the volume of the sample, how much strain it have during the compression. So we have this three-dimensional map of this both information, the displacement of these points of the sample, and a mapping of the strain.
Ah, that sounds very interesting. Yeah. What we totally forgot is to talk about what the material will be for then. What it will be used for. It would be very interesting.
Yeah, maybe we should start with the reason of why I am studying this material. It happens that this material, these glass phone monoliths, they are in fact very interesting because they have two fundamental properties. The first one is that we have some flexibility in making these foams. So we can decide mostly the structural properties of it, like how much air percentage it has inside and the thickness of the walls of this foam, how thick would they be. And this flexibility and also these material are known to have some mechanical and thermal stability. So considering its porosity, it is a light material, it can handle height forces comparable to its lightness. And so these both properties, the flexibility in determining their structures and the resistance of this material, enables us to apply this material in a lot of different areas. For example, for thermal insulation in buildings, for construction, civil construction, for chemical processes to separate chemically some substances. And
how is it used for chemical processes? It's like a filter material then?
As a filter. And even in health aspects, like these materials are known to be used as a replacement, sometimes to bone. So if you have an injured bone or a bone with a disease, you can replace part of them with this material, these glass foams.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
That's very interesting, A very interesting question, I think, for every researcher is, what do you hope your research will be used in future? I think you explained it, but what is maybe your favorite? What is your favorite application?
This is
where
a good question.
You can use exactly this?
I think in the future, I hope that the research that I am doing right now expands the usage of this material, and then I expect that the researchers that will apply this material could handle, like, could better assess which material properties you should use in each application. So my part of the work, my research, my little contribution to the science is to help them to decide which property you will need to which application.
Okay.
Yeah. So
to define for different applications the different properties of the material.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very...
Because, for example, for civil construction, you probably should have a bit much higher resistance than to filtering some chemical separation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And a maybe funny question at the end is, Matthias, if your foam structure could talk, what do you think it would say after going through all these compression tests?
Oh, they would definitely hate me because we apply some forces to it. And sorry to my samples, but thankfully they don't talk.
Okay. Then, Matthias, thank you very much that you visit me here in Freiburg, or visit us in Freiburg, and thanks for the talk, for your time. And it was a pleasure to meet you here. And yes, the audience, thanks for listening, and stay curious and stay excited.